Hi, this is Anne Merchant, and welcome to The Sounds of Science, the podcast brought to you by the National Academy of Sciences, the National Academy of Engineering, the Institute of Medicine, and the National Research Council, collectively known as the National Academies. There's a growing concern about global warming and the impact it will have on people and the ecosystems on which they depend. Temperatures have already risen 1.4 degrees Fahrenheit since the start of the 20th century, and we know that much of this warming occurred in just the last 30 years. Scientists also predict that temperatures will likely rise at least another 2 degrees Fahrenheit and possibly more than 11 degrees over the next 100 years. This kind of warming will cause significant changes in sea level, ecosystems, and ice cover, and those are just a few of the known impacts. In the Arctic, where temperatures have increased almost twice as much as the global average, the landscape and ecosystems are already changing rapidly. All this means that there's a growing need for information that will support effective decision-making in both the public and private sectors as a result of the now rapid changes in Earth's climate. But government agencies, private organizations, and individuals all find themselves increasingly unprepared at a fundamental level for meeting the challenges and opportunities of climate change. Many of the usual practices and decision rules, such as how bridges are built, which zoning rules are implemented, how much private motor vehicles are used, and so on, assume a certain stability of climate conditions, including the continuation of historical patterns of variation and the likelihood of extreme events. This assumption of what experts call climate stationarity, in other words, a climate that isn't changing, has been integral to the ways in which people and organizations think about their choices. But that way of thinking is no longer valid, especially when you consider that our climate will continue to change. And the social and economic changes that come with a changing climate are irrevocably altering the vulnerability of different regions and sectors of society to climate change, as well as their ability to cope with the change. These circumstances combined to prompt the Environmental Protection Agency and the National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration to ask the National Academies to help them develop a framework for designing and evaluating the ways in which decisions are made in light of climate change. Committee member Suzanne Moser is a geographer with a special expertise in the human dimensions of global climate change and environmental hazards. We caught up with her recently to talk about some of the principles of effective decision support outlined in the Academy's report, Informing Decisions in a Changing Climate.
Contrary to common belief, it is not just simply a matter of translating science and shipping it over to some receiver, some decision maker. But in fact, you sit down with a practitioner, with a policymaker, decision maker, and you begin with what they need. What do they do? You know, what are their decisions that they make? What's their context? And in that specific context, what is it that they need? And that may then in turn influence the kind of research or, you know, what of all the knowledge that we do already have, how we might, you know, transform that into something that is usable.
But while it's essential to determine the information needs of the decision maker, it's equally important to recognize that finding the right process for providing decision support is even more important than finding the right information products.
It's not just a matter of a report, a database, or a tool. It's a matter of interacting, communicating, building trust between scientists and the information user. So we suggest to give priority to the process of interaction between these two parties rather than just focusing on the product.
Making effective decisions related to climate change will also require information that comes from a variety of disciplines. So for instance, knowledge of how global average surface temperatures will change won't by itself tell farmers and agricultural managers how much it will cost to water their crops and raise livestock in the future.
What we found very clearly is you don't only provide climate information in this kind of decision support. Climate, of course, is a key variable, but it's not the only thing. People also need to know what's the context and how is that changing? What are the socioeconomic impacts? What are the costs of different options of responding to climate change? So it's a lot more than physical climate science that is needed to provide effective decision support. And that means you have to make connections across disciplines and across different organizations that have that kind of knowledge.
Because the climate is changing so rapidly, information that was right this year may not be good 5 years hence. This is a serious problem since it means that you won't necessarily know whether your decisions make sense from year to year.
If you set up this decision support collaboration, if you will, from the get-go as a learning process where you repeatedly look at how did we do, evaluate your decision, the outcomes, the information you provided, and then go back to the drawing board and make adjustments as is needed, then it seems to be over time people make more effective decisions.
Indeed, the ability to learn from past decisions and respond to changes in the climate is an essential component of effective decision-making. But there are different methods of incorporating learning into the decision support process, and choosing the best approach to do this is as important as recognizing the value of learning itself.
There are a number of ways people think about learning, and the one that we have found seems to be most effective for this particular type of situation is where there are sort of two components that you iteratively go back and forth between, and that is deliberation. You talk about what is going on, how do we think about it, how well did it work, and then support that by analysis. Show me the data. Do a real analysis of what happened, what the impacts of your decisions were, and come back to the deliberation with the results of your analysis, and so then go back and around. In some cases, that may not work, but we suggest that that is sort of the gold standard to move toward.
But there are many barriers to creating effective decision support. One of the most significant ones is that scientists and decision makers are both used to doing what they do best. Scientists doing research and decision makers making decisions. They each do those things in a particular institutional context with a particular type of training and a particular set of cultural norms that dictate what good professional behavior is. Given the differences between these two cultures, getting them together to communicate and collaborate with one another often presents some challenges.
As you can imagine, as when you go visit another nation or something, there are different cultural norms, different standards of what is good behavior. And when you don't know that, you may just find it deeply frustrating because you can't make yourself understood and the other ones don't understand your concerns. So this is part of why we describe or suggest to interact for quite a long time, because then you get to know each other well and you can help overcome some of these barriers.
So who exactly could benefit from better climate-related decision support, and how large is the demand for that kind of information? Sure, it was federal agencies that sponsored the report at the academies, but who were some of the other constituents with a need for better, more relevant knowledge about climate change?
Everyone is affected by climate. So in some sense, you could say it's not just federal agencies, it's everyone. But, you know, when you say it's everyone, it's you and me in our daily decisions. It's agencies at the local level of government. It's non-governmental organizations. It's businesses all over the United States. It's state governments. I mean, you know, the decision makers are everywhere. And so the question really becomes, how can you reach each one of these? We don't think it's a good idea for the federal government to, you know, just be in Washington and provide decisions, handing them out to people all over, but not being near where those decisions get made, because you can't build those face-to-face relationships that we think are so paramount. So it's more important to use maybe regional centers that are connected to local decision makers, and then let them be sort of the interface to the individual decision makers, individual information users. That probably is the far more strategic and efficient way of getting to a lot of people.
So as Congress continues to debate climate legislation, it's critical that we recognize the fact that decision support isn't just about passing on existing scientific knowledge to users who are unaware of what to do with it. It's the effective combination of good communication, meaningful collaboration, and earnest cooperation. And it requires changes on both ends of the spectrum. On behalf of scientists who need to make an effort to interact more frequently with practitioners working at the front lines, and from practitioners, some of whom may not be open to using climate-related information. When that happens, we will be that much closer to building relationships and developing solutions to climate change that will serve us for the long haul. My name is Anne Merchant, and you've been listening to The Sounds of Science, the podcast brought to you by the National Academies, advisors to the nation on science, engineering, and medicine. Be sure to visit us at our website at nationalacademies.org, where we have more than 3,000 books and publications available full text to read free online.